Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. This is Rashi Johnson Edmond here with you another morning. It's beautiful here in Kansas City. And for those of you listening abroad, this is a fantastic time for you to put our number in your phone. If you have any information that you would like to share, if you have any truth that you know we all can use, if there's a particular piece of history that you know about, that you feel like we should know about, you should call 818-691-7348. I know you're looking for for all kind of stuff. You're trying to get to the notes thing. You're trying to look for your pencil. I'm going to say it again because I'm a teacher, and I know how distracted you people are. That number was 818-691-7348. Now, when you call that number, it's going to allow you just to listen. If you want to share information, you're going to press the number one. It's going to put you in a queue. That means you're going to be waiting. You will wait for my co-host or I to ask you your name, see if you're a robot, whether or not you're trying to sell us some Ginsu knives, the whole thing. Once we realize you're a human, with your own opinion that you have formed with a functional brain, you will be allowed to claim on air a powerful, powerful democratic tool. So if you're here and you're listening at the time, you could be on air. If you just happen to be listening after we broadcast this show, remember, we are on in Central Standard Time, from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. And Lee, can you please tell our listeners when we are on the East Coast?
11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Good morning, everyone. What's the word? And on the left coast, it is 8 a.m. until 10 a.m. It's a very early morning. Brother Rodney's coming up in a half a second. He just hit me up. He's not feeling well right now, about now, to be honest with you. He has some dental issues that he's working. He got some dental issues he's working through and stuff. So I'll try not to beat him.
I know
too
that
much
story.
Today, but, here we go. I just got back from Tulsa. I got a write up and BeMoreNews.com. Actually, I'm gonna post that to the page. My man Donnie was gracious enough to do a nice little write up and stuff, featuring about me and my trip. So I definitely have to do that. And he said something to me that was wonderful. He said, you know, bro, you've been working for this moment for a very long time. Take a bow. And it didn't really dawn on me how long I'd been talking about going to Tulsa or participating in the Joe Man's Black Wall Street Award Series until he said that, to be honest with you. And we actually had the pleasure of having Pastor Philip on the show back in 2018. It's been 3 years since he was on the show. And at that point, I said to him, hey, sir, we're going to be in Tulsa, and when I get out there, I'm going to make sure that I honor you with a Joe Man's Black Wall Street Award. And, you know, he was like, oh, okay. And it wasn't as real to him, I don't think, until he actually saw it. As a matter of fact, when I came to the school to present it to him, remember, they have his church, Crossroads Bible Church, not only has a schoolhouse for the youth, but they also have a medical center for the community there in North Tulsa. Well, when I went through to make the presentation, he's like, you know, I almost forgot about this award, but when you had it in your hand, I remember you telling me when I was on your show that you were going to do this, and I appreciate that. And I was like, you know, look, this is something that has been very much on my heart for some time, and I wanted to make sure that I made it happen. So it's cool. You know, but the trip was a lot of ups and downs, y'all, I promise you. From the rental car breaking down, the rental car broke down Saturday night. I'm stuck on the side. Well, not the side, but I'm getting off of the side. Rodney, are you driving? You just opened up a whole lot of air. I'm sitting on the side of the highway in Texas. Not the side of the highway. I gotta get the story straight. It wasn't the side of the highway. I'm sitting in Texas in the middle of nowhere on Interstate 45. And I pulled over to get some gas. I was pulling off the highway actually to get some gas. So as I'm coming off the highway, I'm merging, and I hit the brakes, and the car acted like it didn't want to stop. I mean, literally acted like it didn't want to stop. So I stood on the brakes and finally got the car to slow down enough. So I'm thinking I did something wrong, so I wasn't tripping. Got to a stoplight, got the car moving again, everything was fine, didn't hear any noise, anything like that. Coming up on another stoplight, tried to stop again, and boom, again, same situation. Well, pulled into a Love Travel Center to get something to eat and get some gas and stuff, and barely could stop pulling into the daggone parking spot. So I cut the car. I was like, nope, ain't moving it. It is what it is. Called the car company, the rental company, and they were horrible, absolutely horrible. Every agent I talked to said the agent before them didn't do what they were supposed to do. Long story short, wound up having to take in a hotel overnight because where I was at, they could not get a tow truck to me, nor could they get me a Lyft or Uber because, again, I was in the middle of nowhere, Texas. Finally got, again, decided to take another chance on the car because the hotels were right around the corner. Drove to the hotel, almost hit an Amazon truck because, again, I'm coming up, crossing the bridge, going toward the hotel, and the Amazon truck was coming up the ramp. I'm coming as I'm going across its path, and I barely got the car to stop in enough time to miss that damn truck. But did, by the grace of God, got to the hotel, went to sleep, woke up, getting close to time for me to check out from the hotel. Getting close for me to check out the hotel, realized that no one called me. No one ever showed up with a new car. Called them. Again, agent said, agent before her didn't do what she was supposed to do. So I got picked up around 11, 12 o'clock in the morning, afternoon. And then got over to Dallas, Fort Worth, the DFW, the airport. Run around there with the manager. Finally got it squared. Got a new car and kept it moving. Well, I was supposed to be in Tulsa Sunday morning for 10 o'clock service to do the presentation in front of the congregation. That didn't happen. Wound up going to my cousin's house. Wound up spending some time leaving him. Wound up going to my sister's house, spending some time with my nephew. Raining like cats and dogs. Left out of Dallas around 8 o'clock in the evening or so. Got to Tulsa around 11:30, 11:45 at night. Got a hotel room. Atrocious. That was the worst Holiday Inn Express and Suites I had ever stayed in. But they were due for a refresh. The young lady, you know, said that. She was like, we're due for a refresh. They started on the property across the street. They're coming over here next. Okay, I gave them a pass. Got to my room. Wasn't feeling it. But I was too damn tired to fight over that. So stayed in the room, woke up the next day, did the running around, got up with my sister, got up with Pastor, got up with Sister Latrice, did everything I was supposed to do, was at the site for a portion of the president's speech, got back in the car, ran back to Dallas, hopped on the plane and came back. That was that trip. But that breakdown of the car and being stuck on the side of the road threw everything off. It was horrible.
That sounds horrific. I mean, what we're talking about is with all that traveling going on, they made it seem like people were really getting around better. But they didn't talk about, you know, all the issues that come with people releasing people from their homes and whether or not these machines are prepared for the type of travel we're about to put on them. It's interesting.
Well, I mean, you know, obviously everything's coming back and everyone isn't as prepared. You know, the hotels aren't as prepared. And you would think that the pandemic was the perfect time to do all of that stuff, to do all the refresh, to do maintenance on cars, so on and so forth. You know, because, yeah, you weren't bringing in any money, but when the money came back, what didn't you want or wouldn't you want to be fully prepared and ready for that?
See, what they were prepared to do was get that loan. A lot of businesses went ahead and begged, and they got some money that, in theory, was supposed to tide them over. But in reality, it was quite a bit of money enough to probably do some repairs.
Right.
You know, fix that dope house carpet y'all got in there. Pull them, funky drapes down, at least the ones that's in the room, if not the ones by the window. Definitely spray something behind them headboards. Yeah, they glued on there, but them bugs know that too. At some point when you go through
really
a pandemic, you burn the sheets that you had, and you get you some brand new. Every week you call for new sheets, and you recirculate them because you know you have ran a pandemic through them sheets.
Well, I mean, again, it wasn't the cleanliness of the room or anything like that. It was just the entire property needed a refresh. I mean, again, this is the worst looking hotel that I've been as far as Holiday Inn expression.
But you know what?
It was by far the worst thing.
Do you remember the election, Lee? Oklahoma is all Republican. Yeah, I'm going back to the election.
Yeah.
Oklahoma is 100% Republican. Every county was red.
They got some money over there, though.
Even the county that houses Tulsa was red. Okay, not pale blue or nothing. All right, so we talking about natives who don't care or don't participate, right, who just mad because they got land, clay land that don't really like to grow. It won't support their lifestyle. We talking about this migrated black Americans, right? Migrated because nobody originated in Oklahoma. Everybody in Oklahoma got sent to Oklahoma somehow.
Pretty much.
They wound up there from somewhere between there and, you know, head north. Or they are part of the Trail of Tears. And then
you got
the diehard, you got them one folks. You know who I'm talking about. The kind of people who get mad when you get businessman of the year, and so they find a way to release some kind of something on your business. They talk about it like it's a thing of the past. But if you go to like the Oklahoma Chamber of Commerce, right? If you go to the Tulsa local chamber, you'll see that the black small businessman is still struggling under the weight of systematic racism in Oklahoma.
One of the things that I didn't know, and it's not shocked me that I didn't know this, is that speaking to what you just spoke to, after the massacre in Tulsa, Tulsa was rebuilt pretty quickly. You know, Black Wall Street was rebuilt fairly quickly, within 5 years, and actually was more prosperous after it was rebuilt than it was in its first iteration. So, kudos to those brothers and sisters that laid it down and made sure that, you know, folk didn't just discourage them for the sake of discouraging them. They fought and stayed and rebuilt and made it even better when they refreshed. So, hey, you know, look at me now. You know what I'm saying? But nonetheless, the massacre that occurred in Tulsa should have never happened. And the fact that folk are just able to recognize this or jump on the bandwagon, if you will, because, you know, this is something I've been trumpeting for a very long time. Black Wall Street has been something I've been trumpeting for a very long time. So I'm not a new up and coming on this one. I'm an OG in this game, and
I
was at some rallies and stuff. I was able to see that still. Even within the limited time that I was there, I have some video and stuff at one of the rallies I was at. I was at some rallies and stuff just listening to people, and I'm like, how long have you been engaged in this conversation? But, you know, the thing that matters is people are talking about it now. So,
well, yeah, and you know
fight
why?
The fight.
Can I give you one of the reasons why they have to say it now?
Go ahead.
We are still within until 20... until 2025, it went from 2015 to 2025. We are still within our decade of the United Nations recognizing and analyzing the conditions of African Americans in this country. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I know that the case for reparations has been brought before the United Nations, and they have agreed to go further than the United States government has. So, yes, I'm familiar.
The United Nations for the last 10 years declared the United States, declared African Americans third world under third world conditions within a first world nations, and they analyzed whether or not to put the United States under sanction and what do they call it, for being against the Geneva Code for how the United States has treated the people of the black, the Africans, the African descendants of this nation. Okay? And so part of that is them having to tell the truth. So now we get to really have a for real talk about reparations, because that's our the only other thing they could do really, Lee, is have a whole nother constitutional convention. The only way we could fix it is to totally rewrite or to amend the Constitution. This is how it's been explained to me. And that's not going to happen. And so what we have to do is create the same thing we did for the interned Japanese, the same thing we did for the disenfranchised Native American, the same thing we did for the white slave owner who had to set his possessions free and decide and had to be compensated for that.
Right. Reparations for I'm saying reparations for the white folks, but not for those that were enslaved. Yeah, how does that work? Good morning, Brother Rodney. What's happening, bro? How you feeling?
Good morning, Brother Lee, Sister Rashi. How are you?
I'm here.
Well,
I'm
how
so
you feeling, bro?
About next weekend, I'm almost about to start out walking. You're gonna have to take your money back from Spirit. I'm ready to walk to Vegas.
Well,
put your walking shoes on and come on in.
That's it. Well, I mean, next weekend is big for a number of reasons. First off, I don't know if I said it or not, but our guest next week is going to be Mad Skills. And if you're not familiar with Mad Skills VA, get familiar with Mad Skills VA. Again, a good, you know, I got to ask Skills how he feels about our relationship. I know Skills through, we have a mutual friend, and we've known one another now for, about 20 years, actually. And it's hilarious because I bumped into him, and Rodney, I'm going to let you get in. I'm sorry for cutting you off, but I bumped into him at the Baltimore Harbor a couple weeks ago, and he's just sitting out chilling. And I'm walking, and I see him at the corner of my eye. I called him out. I was like, oh, so you just going to sit there like nobody know who you are. So he looked, he's like, oh, well, what's up, yo? So we started cutting up and stuff, and I was like, man, I want you on the show. And he's like, oh, I got you. So to be honest, that's a major play. So if you know anything about hip-hop, this cat is major. He is truly, truly major. And It's really a blessing to have him in the Rolodex where I can just like call him. That's no bullcrap. Like that's really, really cool. You know what I mean? It's really, really cool. But you know, this month is Black Music Month, so I wanted to feature some artists and whatnot. And actually, too, I got with my sister because she's doing the opera right now. So I got with my sister and I was like, yo, you know, you need to come and do my show. And she was like, you know what? You're right. You know, so I'm going to try to shake her out, too, because her opera ends this week, I believe. So she should be recovered and recouped by the end of the month so I can have her on. Because, you know, it's not often that we talk about or know someone that looks like us that sings opera. You know what I'm saying? And is actually getting paid for it. And my sister.
And we out there too.
And this is my sister. This ain't you know one of my homegirls from back in the day. This is actually my sister. So you know it's different because she and I use. I'm gonna leave that story for later. But yeah, next week is major. So first we got Skills. and then we all hop on planes and we converge in Vegas, and we have that family thing and that family time, and we do some bonding and the photo shoot. So, Rashi, to bring you up to speed, because I don't know if I told you or not, the photo shoot is going to happen first thing in the morning because it's hot as hell in Vegas right now. So we're going to do the photo shoot first. We'll do breakfast. We'll do the photo shoot. We'll leave there. We'll do the shooting. We'll do lunch. We'll do some other stuff. We'll come back, and then we'll reconvene for dinner. So, yeah. Rodney gave me that change just yesterday, maybe the day before yesterday, some crap like that. I don't remember, but, yeah.
So smart. You got to work with
Rodney, you ready?
You know.
You ready for us to take over Vegas, bro?
Hey, man, brilliant. Let's go ahead and take it over because it's ready to be taken over.
Hey, don't talk to country people like that. You know, I can turn up. Well, I can turn halfway up. My left knee won't let me turn all the way up like I used to.
Oh, the left knee.
It's the left one, bro. It's not. Mr. Rodney.
Yes, ma'am.
I was told you're feeling a bit under the weather. What's going on? You all right?
Oh, I'm all right. One of my teeth are not all right. I have cracked right down almost all the way down one of my teeth. So it makes it a little difficult on occasion. And I went to see the dentist, who turned out to be my neighbor from years back out at Nellis Air Force Base. And then my hygienist wound up working with one of the Lodge brothers here that I've known for, a couple of decades at least. And wound up riding motorcycles with one of the guys I worked with at my last duty station at Nellis. So it wound up being it typified one of the things about Las Vegas is it has a big city feel, but it's really a small town when it comes to people and population.
Mm. I'm glad you're talking about dental health because, you know, mental health and dental health are some of the most ignored parts of the black community. We don't really think we have the time to go crazy, and we don't, you know, expect anybody to be looking out our mouths, so we ain't doing everything that needs to happen. And it's somewhat expensive, you know, to achieve your dental health. I'm trying to be...
Nah,
okay,
it's trying to be nice. Don't be nice. We need to tell the truth on this one. Dental health is not so much that it's expensive, it's that your insurance covers so little of the cost. So you can have insurance, like I do, but you still wind up paying potentially thousands to tens of thousands of dollars for dental care. And even as a retired veteran, unless a veteran is 100% disabled, they're paying the same thing for dental care as everybody else. So dental care, here's a little factoid for you folks out there. Ancient world, it was your mouth that was more likely to kill you than anything else. Number one healthcare killer in the ancient world was your mouth, your dental hygiene, or lack thereof, because you get that abscess and you get those infections, and you know your mouth is not that far from your brain, you know the blood flows, and that was what killed a good percentage of people in the ancient world was the lack of good dental hygiene. Of course, we know that Africans pioneered dental health like they pioneered everything else that we don't talk about, which brings me back to Tulsa, because Tulsa was a historic moment. people are talking, like Lee said, people are talking about Tulsa now. They're talking about Black Wall Street. They're talking specifically about the race massacre, which is what we've been calling it for years. But when the president of the United States goes there, not to do a rally and kill the one black man that's supporting him, Herman King, but when the president of the United States goes there to recognize the historic marker in this country's history, which is the destruction, the temporary destruction of Black Wall Street and the permanent massacre of the people there, and call it what it is, and then mention that the insurance companies, as we were talking about dental insurance, the insurance companies didn't cover it because it was listed as a riot versus a massacre. Well, you know, we've been paying insurance for a long time, and I anticipate people getting paid, not reparations, but getting paid what they're due from those insurance companies. I expect the federal government to pay for some land that was stolen from those people. Because remember, even though Greenwood rebuilt, they didn't have the same land boundary that they had before the massacre, before the destruction. So there's land owed, there's insurance money owed with compounded interest for 100 years.
Yeah, like I'm giving them $300,000.
So there is change is in the air. And Lee, one of the other significant things that I heard this week, and you talked about how long you've been talking about Tulsa, is some very prominent news people got on television and they apologized. They started their comments with an apology, and they said, up until a few days ago, never heard of it, never knew about it, wasn't taught about it in school. Another fellow that was on there, I think a former campaign manager or a spokesman or something, he got in and said, well, I have to say the same thing. Up until a few months ago, I'd never heard of it. And as I'm listening to that, I'm saying, now I realize some people are going to say, well, why didn't you? And fair enough. But let's get to the positive. They heard about it now. They're acknowledging that they've heard about it, and they're calling it what it is. That is major progress. So people who say that nothing has changed, I'm like John Lewis. You haven't walked in my shoes. Because I have seen a lot that has changed. I've been talking about Tulsa, Black Wall Street, and Greenwood when I was every year on the radio show, and every year I was always amazed at black people who didn't know. So let's not jump too quick on the white folks who are saying that they don't know, because there's black
people that didn't know
up until this year. So this and the reason, and Lee, this is going to lead to something else, and the president touched on this. And this is the lack of accurate and full history of not just this country, but the world, which is going to, you know, one of my pushes has been for the integration and incorporation of African/African-American history and culture throughout all curriculum in all publicly funded schools and institutions of higher learning like colleges and universities. This is closer to happening now. We have a new education secretary. I had a chance to speak to then former Vice President Biden at the time, and that was one of the issues that I spoke about. So I'm anticipating there to be movement on some major fronts of black liberation, not just reparations, but black liberation.
Because the fundamental idea, Brother Rodney, is when you know better, you can
do better.
Better, or do better and act
right.
better, because you know how what bad is. You don't have to go trying to, one, reinvent it, or you can recognize it and try to stop it when you see it. But if you never know about the atrocity, then the actual possibility of repeating increases, not decreases because we stop talking about it, but increases because people begin to forget what's possible in the minds and hearts and behavior of humans who feel like they've been disenfranchised, whether they have or not. When they feel like they don't have what they're supposed to have, even if it's something that belongs to someone else, humans will destroy, and we have to teach that. And that's part of what the 1619 Project is about. And that 1619 Project is some of the workings of critical race theory that needs to be woven into the fabric of education in every nation, because every nation on the planet has a critical race issue. No country on this planet is without it. And that's what we need to understand. This is not an American, even though Americans have this issue, it is not singular to us. Huh? I do hear that.
Rodney, you okay? Rodney? Okay, he must have got the word. And Rashi, perfect point. But and I don't want to hop off of Tulsa, but I want to recognize Boley. Boley, Oklahoma, was even more prominent and prosperous than Tulsa was. You know, you're talking about a community that had its own power company. They had their own police force. They had everything that they wanted and needed in Boley. It is the most famous independent black city in Oklahoma. And again, something that people don't know about, you know. But I also want people to think, and I had the pleasure of being on someone's show on Tuesday. Remember this, you know, Tulsa was not the only black Wall Street. Because black folks were not allowed to shop with white folks, there were black Wall Streets everywhere. So your city, your town had a black Wall Street. It's simply the place where all the black-owned businesses were, wherever they congregated. In Vegas, it was West Las Vegas, a.k.a. the Black Strip. You know, in Detroit, it's Black Bottom. In Chicago, Southside Chicago. In California, L.A., it was Watts and Inglewood. So no matter where you are, you have been molded, if not you directly, then your family, have come in contact with Black Wall Street. So let's not forget those communities either, but let us never forget the fact that the U.S. government dropped a bomb on its people in the Greenwood, Archer, and Pine community, the Gap, which is the name of the band. That's where they got their name from. And the song, You Dropped the Bomb on Me, it was about the Tulsa Massacre. You know, so I love the way they played on that whole thing to make the song work, but there was a lot of history in that song. And let us never forget.
I don't mean to be rude, though, Lee, but what do you think about the fact that it is up to Oklahomans to make this. Like, when there's something that happened in Kansas, like what happened with the fighting for, you know, slavery and whatnot, we'd get taught that, right? They made people from Kansas made sure that Kansas stuff gets put in somebody's curriculum, even if it's just in Kansas, Missouri, and Nebraska and the neighboring states, right? It was up to Oklahoma to craft a narrative that they sell to people like Halton Mills, I think they are, who are our text creating people. People like Harcourt Publishing, who make quite a bit of our textbooks. You have to say to them, hey, if you are publishing any history textbooks right now, this is a narrative that absolutely needs to be included. And if your author has not seen fit to fit this in narrative in between 1877 to some like around the Industrial Revolution. That's how they really teach history, by breaking it up into segments. If you don't have someone pushing that Oklahoman narrative of the trail, you know, you can't let people stop you at the Trail of Tears. Why do we know the Trail of Tears? Because somebody from Oklahoma made sure that we knew that that's where they marched those Native Americans. But as far as we know historically, nothing else happened in that state. Okay? Mm-hmm. And that is up to Oklahoma as part of a republic federation, which is what this country is, not a union, a republic federation. Because if it was a union, we would be required to tell the story of every state within each state.
Well,
but since we don't do it that way, it's up to each state to get their narrative put in the history books of this nation. And if you try and your best will know, then we will never know. So now we need an independent council of historians hired by the nation who go around and they create this bandwidth of information that they require any history-creating text maker to put in at least this amount per subject if they want their book published, if they want it to be used in a text capacity. If not, we get it out of the school.
Hmm. Well, which all information is in a book. You know, you just got to find a damn book. And our history is written, but it's hidden in books. And oftentimes the section of books that covers our history is in the back of the bookstore, buried behind some novel about something. The folks stop in front and get the novel about something and don't reach around or don't go around the corner and get all the good stuff, which is the historical stuff. Because all history is not born. Not at all. And unfortunately, the history of black folks in America comes with a lot of killing, drama, mystery, and the like. You know, it is reality television before reality television became reality television. So, you know, who's the father, who's the mother, where they at, and all the rest of that jazz all rolled into one. But the story of folks who forged their own way, who were wise enough to incorporate their funds together, who were thoughtful enough to make those funds into an actuation of a village or a town or something of that nature, it is definitely worth our time to learn, understand, and hopefully repeat while improving, without a doubt. So I'm grateful that folks are in now. I'm grateful that folks are willing to put in the work to continue to bring this information to light. I'm grateful that folks are using the name in order to build a brand, or because, you know, hopefully they're telling the story of the name as they build the brand or what have you. So yeah, I'm cool with all that. You know, it's sad that it took a massacre in order for folks to recognize this town for all its splendor. But, you know, God works in mysterious ways, and this is what happened to Tulsa. Now, I'm in Tulsa, and I did not recognize that there were two parts of Tulsa. There's North Tulsa and there's South Tulsa. North Tulsa is where the majority of the minorities live. South Tulsa is where the majority of the others live, which include minorities with money. And when I say minorities, I mean black folks. I mean Latinos. That's what I mean by minorities. But there was a straight dividing line. And as I listened to Pastor talk about the difference between those in the North and those in the South, there was a true passion there, because he has truly and firmly entrenched his roots in the North of Tulsa and, you know, trying to make that place a much better place. And I hope to come back in another 3 to 5 years, if not sooner, and do some more reporting with him and see what's going on, to be honest with you. So they're rehabbing houses and stuff of that nature right now. The young lady that bought the first house, she was at work at the medical center, so I got to say, and I got an opportunity to say hello to her. And you know, they're doing the thing. They plan on opening a girls' school next school year, so they're massively in the hunt for a location for that. They're doing some brilliant stuff, man.
It's going to take memorials. Yeah. They need to commission quite a few artists to bring, you know, to paint murals and build sculptures and statues and whatnot that explain the history of the state, the history of that region, so that even if you don't get it in the classroom, because you will have some diehard instructors, they don't care what the curriculum says. Even if they do teach the subject, they're going to put their bias on it. So for those, right. There needs to be public education, circulating exhibits, museum exhibits, our history in the hearts and minds of this nation, so that we don't have to wait 100 years for people to see what had happened was.
Right. But minus the input of the Daughters of the Confederacy, as Rodney is quick to remind me all the time, you know, we need to be able to do these things outside of them and outside of their sphere of influence, so that whatever we're doing it for and amongst ourselves. Because who's going to tell our story better than us? Who wants to know our story more than us? As I look at it, what do you take from Rodney?
Well, I wanted to go back to what Roger was saying about the people of Oklahoma doing it as a state. And I just, you know, she said something earlier that it was, I think she said close to 100% red or insurrectionist, otherwise known as the former Republican Party. We see laws being passed in Texas just this legislative cycle to suppress black people voting. Other people too, but it's primarily targeted at black people. We see Texas putting forth a law that makes it illegal to teach CRT, to say anything about slavery as in the negative. That's going on in that region right now. There are not enough black people in Oklahoma. There are not enough people opposite the controlling party. And with redistricting, we're going to see Texas have an even greater influence. And that's school book central. Is the Republic of Texas is school book central. So this is a national effort, and it also is going to require the federal government to get involved. We should never, our history as a separate class anymore. It is history, and it should be taught just like European history is taught. European history is taught every class, every subject throughout all curriculum. It doesn't make a difference. You're being taught European history, you're being fed lies. We see the damage that the big lie of X-45, what it's done to this country in a very short period of time.
So let's do like Frederick told us. Let's swing for the fences. And in this case, it's swinging for what's right. And what is right in the United States of America is that all history, the complete history, which the African-American and Africans before them are integral part. There is no United States of America without the African / African-American. Just would not exist. And we need to push for state legislature, but we also need to push our Congress. And yes, even though President Biden is speaking well, we need to continue to push him to do more, because that federal money that goes into each state, let's do like we've done before when it came to desegregating schools. If you want this money, then this is what you need to do to your curriculum. If you don't do this to your curriculum, then this is being cut. If you want federal grant money in general, this is what needs to be done to your curriculum. If you want federal road money, this is what needs to be done to your curriculum. So he has huge sway in controlling the purse in a way that maybe Congress won't, because of people like Kristen Sinema and Joe Manchin. But let him push it as far as he can push it within his power while we're pushing it on the streets, organizing people to go vote en masse and coming up with slogans specific to, if you want our vote, teach our history. If you want our vote, teach our history, and amongst others. This is within our power. That's why they don't want us to vote, and they're doing so much voter suppression, because they see the power of black people when it comes to voting. We have to see that power ourselves and then exercise that power.
And I'm glad that you have that venue in your mind. I guess what I think about is for those who either are too young to vote yet, or, okay, fine, they don't believe in that, but they do believe in some other way of getting their voice and the message heard. And some of this can happen for the parents who are listening is with an actual conversation with every instructor that ever teaches your child. When parent-teacher conference comes around, it is a 100% valid question to ask your teacher, your child's teachers, how are you introducing the idea of being an African descendant in America in your curriculum? Do you speak at all about black people and their accomplishments? Do you have a different set of criteria for your black students than you do your other students? Because if you do, even if it's, oh, I just love them so much, I don't even, yell or I don't really discipline them that much because I know they have it rough wherever they're from. That behavior differential, I call it. If those things exist in the mindset of your child's instructor, then you can already gauge, honestly, whether or not your child is going to be receiving the information that they need in order to be mindful of things like critical race theory or what the accomplishments of other nations have been in this nation. If they don't talk about Japanese internment, you don't understand why the Asiatic culture feels so inclined to be so separate. Because when they were ready to join this nation, even ideologically 100%, we rounded some of them up and put them in prison. So if we don't teach that, we don't understand why, Tan Amagama, who just happens to be at our school, doesn't really talk to us. She don't really talk to us because we don't talk about her. We don't talk about what we did in Vietnam. But we got quite a few Vietnamese, Cambodian children, Hmong children peppered throughout this educational system in this country, but we don't talk about why they're here. They're here because of a treaty we made with their country that after they get through pillaging and killing in our name, we was going to scoop some of them up and relocate them here in the United States. But we don't teach that. So, and we don't teach about them at all. I never did learn about the Vietnam War. I learned about the Civil Rights Movement, but it happened exactly right on top of currently with the Vietnam conflict. But they just don't even talk about it. Not even the civil rights opposition to the Vietnam conflict. They won't even do that. There is a systematic removal of information that will help this nation heal through information. Form the womb. If there is no womb, if there is no historical wound in the mindset of the person, form the womb and then create a solution to where we don't have to keep doing that, where they know it's possible, so we don't go down that road. If you stop creating the wound by informing the person about the possibilities, then you remove the possibility of healing and social unity, even based on, you know, yeah, I'm mad about what happened, but at least you know what happened and I know what happened, and you can't be sitting around here talking about, oh, I didn't know that.
But But that's based on the assumption that certain folks want social unity. Like, I don't think that those in power, and I'm not necessarily talking about politicians, I'm also talking about corporations, want social unity. This disjointment is a money market and it's a cash cow, a money market and boom. We're talking about ammunition, right? So Rodney and I are talking about buying some ammunition. As we're talking about this, it comes to light that we're still going through a shortage, so we're trying to find resources that will allow us or places that will allow us to buy at a great rate, but you don't necessarily have that because you have You have it's a supply and demand situation, right? So now the demand is really, really high. Supply is really, really low. Of course, prices are going to go up. What you going to do? What you got to get it if you want it / need it. You got to get it. So how do you find the best price? Who do you go through? The scheming that we've done in order to get some 5.56 ammunition is ridiculous. You know, up until yesterday, we were still looking for 9mm ammo at a decent price. But what are we to say no? Why are we buying so much? Well, because other people are buying a lot. So it's like, okay, why are they buying so much? I don't want to be the one left out, which causes more panic buying, less supply, more demand. It's a vicious-ass cycle. But again, you're talking about a situation where we're assuming that social unity or social justice is what everybody wants. I don't disagree with that. I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that at all. I said disagree. I apologize. Thank you for checking. I don't agree with that at all.
I mean, no.
I think
nobody wants to form that social wound. No one wants to become empathetic because that means you take on some of that hurt, some of that distrust, some of that confusion of possibility. You take that on into your psyche. Like we said earlier in the show, when you know something, you become responsible in your mind for that information. You have to actually push it out if you don't want it, because if not, it will form a connection to other things in your life and become a part of your mental lexicon. So when you do learn that at one point, you know, we gave people, not we, there were people in this nation who historically, who gave other people in this nation blankets, say that they knew had disease in it, essentially, intentionally giving them the Corona Man to see what that would do in decimating that population. Then you probably wouldn't have so many people out here willing not to get vaccinated. They would be like, let me at least vaccinate so I don't get whatever they're trying to give me. Or maybe that's why they are so unwilling to get vaccinated. They feel like this corona vaccination is yet another smallpox blanket.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that fear of the government, especially when it comes to vaccines, runs deep in our community, and it should. I mean, why should it not? Not only are you talking about smallpox, you're talking about the bad blood and the syphilis droves down in Tuskegee, Alabama. You're talking about sterilization of prisoners and or just young people in general in North Carolina. There are a number of experiments radiation. The brother that was given radiation on the scalp and made his scalp just all big and basically just a continual sore, because that's what it was. You know, come on now. Of course, why would we? Why should we? But as I said, I was the one hopped in line and got both of my shots. Why? Because my ass like to travel. So I was like, hey.
You don't understand what the understanding is. There is no industry, and I have to say this slow. There is no industry in this country that does not have a exploitation foundation.
Mm.
And what we are asking is not for us just to teach it in the school, but for every industry out there to say, okay, this was our part of this disenfranchisement. Not we didn't, or we apologize, but okay, yeah, we apologize, but for this, we know that Harvard took land from slaves, to build their campus. They have to acknowledge that some of the land and some of the found money built for that university was actually the selling of slaves went into the selling of slaves and the taking of some property went into the building of Harvard, right? They got to say it, right? The people of the Corporation of Gynecology and Obstetricians need to have a public acknowledgement that all them procedures that they use on us, cesareans, putting devices in us, all that good stuff, removing the uterus for cancerous reasons, those were all practiced by Jewish doctors on African women, slaves, back in the day, trying to, quote-unquote, perfect that skill. They need to say that. The pharmaceutical agencies need to say that they have these weird chemicals that they try out on small populations of Asiatic countries and Africana countries. They don't talk about it. But before they release it on people that matter, they try it out on people who they feel like they can risk. And the people who they try it out on, they buy in because it's $1,000, which will sustain their household for a year. But they die. And nobody, so these atrocities are within every industry. Nobody is immune. Not the petroleum people, not even the agriculture, right? Even the agriculture people are steeped in exploitation. Everybody needs to come up off their shit and say what had happened was. And then when the curtain of exceptionalism is removed, when you pull back the curtain of exceptionalism, then we can, that's the scar you get created, right? That's the wound you create when you pull back the curtain of exceptionalism. But from there, mm-hmm. you grow into a real person, Lee. You're not one of these people who think, who believe in the concept of the welfare queen. You're not one of these people who think, you know, that you have, that it's okay to pay upwards of $5,000 more for rent just so you don't, literally, so you don't have to see black people because there's a housing thing that'll screen them out for you.
You got some black people willing to do that.
They are. This is what Baldwin Hills, right? Baldwin
mm-hmm.
Hills. You know, every city had a rich, what I call the rich nigga cohort. You know what I'm saying? And I don't like
mm-hmm.
them. I feel like they more pathological than anybody. Because imagine growing up with the illusionment curtain around you. That's one thing, right? But scratching
mm-hmm.
somebody's eyes out until you create your own curtain of exceptionalism and then existing behind it as if you don't know curtain, that is insanity enacted.
Mm.
And so I don't like mm-hmm. Michael Jordan. I know what it took to build the Jordan legacy, right? It took
mm-hmm.
him investing in slave labor. It took him investing in prison, private prisons, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it took him exploiting, you know, $4,000 or $5,000 for a pair of shoes, Lee.
Yeah. Ridiculous, right? Straight up ridiculous.
We have to pull our relationships back to these people. Even if they want our, like, you know how Rodney was saying, if they want our vote, they have to teach our reality or
mm-hmm.
our history. If they want
mm-hmm.
our
mm-hmm.
vote, they have, okay, if you want me to buy your outfit, you got to tell me about them Chinese people you got sewing the collar on your shirt.
You think Jordan going to really come out and tell you about that?
Okay. If you want me to buy these grapes, I want a picture of that field where they got pulled out of. I want to see the conditions of the migrant workers picking these grapes. I want this picture updated on a monthly basis. Let me see them.
Mm.
And you better not make them smile either.
Why they always got to show that teeth?
Because I can't stand no happy dancing migrant worker. You know it ain't real. But you understand what I'm saying?
I know.
But you get what I'm saying, Lee?
I know what you mean.
We have to make these people responsible or else we won't get any change. They'll keep feeding us this fake reality on these different social media sites. They'll keep feeding us this fake reality everywhere we go. And we never evolve into the type of society where it can't happen again. We just get to keep replaying
right.
it over and over again.
Right. Rodney, I'm sorry.
So,
Lee,
I wanted to jump in real quick, and I wanted to remind folks to not underestimate the power of our young people, our children, even small children. The number one influencer on adults are their children. For those who don't mm. remember the trash heap that America used to be in the 60s and 70s,
mm.
it was
New York
children.
City. Good Lord.
It was children combined with activists influencing media to give greater influence on children who had greater influence on their parents that cleaned up this nation. Now, some of you may not remember Chief, I think his name was Chief Ironside or Chief Ironhorse, who used to have that one tear coming out of his eye.
Yeah, the commercial that came in at the end of the night. I know what you're talking about.
Well, that was a combined effort of media, business,
education, and children, because they knew that they could influence children through media and that children would in turn influence their parents. That is what led to cleanup of America. This thing with racism, white supremacy, and all of the other things we talked about, and going back to that education piece, is when we society, pushes media, which is a business, and oh, by the way, guess who is the number one consumer of media in America? It is black people. So once again, that gives us major influence, whether we're talking about with our vote or with our dollars. There simply is no greater influence than us when we exercise that influence. So as a people who want to get education in our schools, you know, I didn't grow up on Schoolhouse Rock, but I was still influenced by Schoolhouse Rock. And most of us still remember how a bill becomes a law through Schoolhouse Rock. And I'm just using one example.
That's right. Sesame Street. Well, okay, so what we're talking about in essence, though, is anti-literacy legislation. We need to, in general, have an Inform America campaign. But our information needs to have both historical and current application, you know, references that will help us apply this. Because in general, we're talking about, this whole time we've been talking about letting people know, getting people to know in the school, outside, in their churches, on the billboard, right?
Mm-hmm.
How much of getting people to understand and know is a part of your black agenda, Mr. Rodney? Because honestly, you have come the furthest along of the three of us, or four of us, including Mr. Berry, of course, in developing some plan of change, a plan of action for change, right?
Well, you know, Sister Rossi, everything is not done through politics, but a lot of things are done through politics. And it is, like most things, a game that black people have been locked out of. And when they've been allowed into, they were given certain rules that they had to play by that others didn't necessarily have to play by. So that is important. But there is, to your point that you've made on the show many times, there is nothing greater than the power of the people, whether directly in politics or in the community. So with the Black Leadership Summit and the Black Agenda, this is key into what we're trying to do. I know this is a little bit of local Nevada politics, but it has national ramifications, because in this legislative session that just closed out, something major happened. A couple of things major. Well, actually quite a few, but I'm just going to list two that I've been involved with. And one is changing traffic violations to misdemeanors, minor offenses. Getting rid of fines and fees for some of these traffic violations. That just happened. I think it was AB 116 here in Nevada. That happened because one of our black queens lobbied our legislature, because that has a direct impact on police enforcement, law enforcement in our communities, because they make money off of imprisoning black people as they did during the convict leasing days. Which leads me to another great thing that happened here that's going to have national ramifications. And the Nevada State Constitution still allowed slavery. That's right, I said it. In 2021, the Nevada State Constitution still allows slavery. We talked about this on the show previously. But that's not strange, because the United States Constitution, and this goes to your point earlier about rewriting the Constitution, it is going to be rewritten. You can mark my words on that. And a part of that rewrite is going to be to totally abolish slavery from the 13th Amendment. These things are in the works, and it passed the Nevada State House in this this assembly session to remove slavery from the Nevada Constitution. This is going to be, watch the movement go across this country in other states that still allow slavery, because that impacts how we treat our prison inmates. Another piece of legislation that was put forward here in Nevada was paying inmates at least a minimum wage. Some inmates make 11 cents an hour because they can be treated as slaves according to the U.S. and the Nevada state and other state constitutions. These are all laws from slavery to re-enslave specifically then African Americans. And Rashi, you were talking about other people's history and culture. Someone asked me, they says, Rodney, why is it that the Asians get a hate crimes bill? Why is there anti-Semitism for Jews, but there is no black hate bill? Which is a fair question. But the response is, because that's the way our government and the people are set up. But the flip side of it is when black people have barriers removed from them, everybody gets barriers removed from them, including women and white people. So do I want something specific for black people? Yeah, that would be nice. But when we push full rights for us, because remember, black people don't have full voting rights in this country. Asians do. Jews do. Black people don't. So when we get it, everyone else gets it. And the one way for sure to improve things for any other group is you improve things or you remove barriers from the African American. And we are truly the group that when we rise, all boats rise, because we bring them with us. That's what we carry in our wake. So financially, we're in the driver's seat. You know how the Major League Baseball moved out of, what is it, Florida? Because it's like, what's going on here? The number one moviegoers are black people, TV watchers, black people, video game players, black people. You want to influence businesses? You tell them, look, this, we want education in our schools to be comprehensive, inclusive of us. We want you to put pressure on Texas, which is the mecca of school books. Oh, and by the way, we want our fifth largest school district to lead the charge in this, which, guess what, happens to be right here in Las Vegas in the Clark County School District, is the fifth largest school district in the nation. We have over 340,000, I think it is, students in right here in Las Vegas. When we buy books, and we used to buy books twice a year, that was like unheard of for a school district. But when we buy books, when we commission books to be produced, when our legislature finally gets the man parts and the backbone to enforce the laws that they've already passed for an inclusive education, and of course we need people's help to keep pushing them, going to change books that other people buy in other states because they simply don't have the financial resources to commission books, so they buy books from the larger school districts like us. That will push districts like L.A. Unified, Chicago, Dade County, Miami-Dade, and, of course, the number one school district, New York. So we have, again, we have the means to do a lot of these things. We just need to start exercising those things. My brother, Aki Buck, is listening from the New Black Panthers. And, you know, they're out there making moves. It's time for us to, you know, start to coalesce with one another, because when you take that open hand and you bring it into that fist, when we see that black power sign, that's when we're powerful. We have got to start coalescing around these ideas. And yes, Lee, that's what the Black Leadership Summit with the Black Agenda was about, was bringing us together around these ideas, knowing that we have the influence, but we don't know that we have the influence, and that education is the key, our buying power is the key, but it's all going through politics. We cannot get away from that. We may not like it, but that is what runs this country, fueled by money, but we control the money. If we decide we're not going to AMC movie theaters no more, guess what the AMC is going to start doing? What can we do to get you back? Because we want that black dollar.
And it is almighty. And I find us to be fairly good. I mean, because we don't believe in the actual term manufacturer suggested retail prices. We don't know what that is. So I feel like we do well with our black dollar in general. When we are not trying to emulate, we can put our money in fairly good places. And it's proven by places like Tulsa, Oklahoma. That was not one millionaire who built it. That was probably quite a few what they call SNU, systems, where people were building wealth by adding their money to a consortium of money and then to creating a lottery of sorts where one person who has a developed business plan and all they're needing is a little bit of capital in order to create their own particular business. They're able to put incremental money into this SUTSU system, submit their business plan, and when their turn comes, they open up their shoe shop, daiquiri shop, bookstore, dentistry, you know, things of that sort. But in that, they commit to a continuous contribution of whatever they can into this pool of money that's used for economic development. In my opinion, that a legal and safe way to do that is what we are missing.
So there's, one of the things about Tulsa is as we have these discussions, though, and this is the way you spread it, we have their attention with Tulsa right now. It's taken a while. Lee been in the fight for a long time. It's taken a while. But we have their attention. When you get their attention, you know, when you get them around the throat, if you let go of the throat, they may wind up getting you by the throat. So we got to keep squeezing, keep pressing and pushing. And one of the ways we do that is we expand the conversation. And we remind, because white people are going to start, they're going to start saying, oh, well, it was just Tulsa. That was horrible, but it was just Tulsa. We got to, when we get a chance, take the opportunity to throw in other places. Because remember, Tulsa happened around Memorial Day, right? It started on Memorial Day. And in that conversation of Memorial Day, we can throw in Tulsa. In the conversation of Tulsa, we can throw in Memorial Day. Why do I talk about Memorial Day every year? I talk about Memorial Day every year because black people created Memorial Day. We briefly discussed that on the previous show. But we have to show our influence and our import into the development of this country. And all them white so-called patriots out there, they just laud Memorial Day. Well, are they still going to laud it when they find out, because most of them don't know, that it was created by black people? But let's expand that, though, because
there was a guy trying to talk about this, and they turned his mic off. There was an elder veteran trying to talk about this, and in the middle of his speech, his mic went dead.
Well, let's keep in mind, and this goes back to why the education at an early age is so important, is when you've been brainwashed, or in this case, when you've been whitewashed in the white supremacy madrasa called the American education system, that means whatever knowledge you receive from there on out is filtered through the lens of white supremacy and racism. And because it's filtered through the lens of white supremacy and racism, when you're presented with the truth and it goes through that filtering process, it's transformed into something totally different. So probably if we use Pareto's theory, at least 80% of the racist white supremacists that are in the United States, which has national implications, probably 80% of them are not going to change no matter what we do, no matter what we show them, what we tell them. It's just not going to happen. Even when they have mixed race children in their family, by themselves or by their children, their grandchildren, right? We got to acknowledge that. The way that this changes goes back to that earlier thing is through education. You don't have to fix something if it's not broken. Well, we break white people and every other group of people who comes to that white supremacy madrasas with white supremacy. United Daughters of the Confederacy, please look them up, know their influence. Small group of people. They control education, which controls the mind. Controlling the mind, control the money, control the politics. We gotta understand the system and then work the system. So my point here is that we have to take control of these things and realize that that 80%, they just have to die out. And when they leave this planet, we have to cut off the source. The way you cut off the source is you turn the spigot of creating new white supremacists through education, cut it off by teaching a comprehensive education. Because then those children, just like with trash, well, mommy, daddy, we shouldn't do that.
But Mr. Romney, Tucker Carlson ain't but like 40 years old. We waiting on him to die.
Yes, you're. That is a part of the equation. A part of the equation is we have to be realistic. Is that if we use Pareto's theory, 80% of the people are not going to change. If we use social science, and that's my background, we know that you can brainwash a person, or in this case whitewash, same difference, in a matter of hours. And it can take a lifetime of comprehensive therapy for that person to get their previous self back if they ever do. That's a matter of hours. American citizens who've gone through the white supremacy madrasas are there for about 5.5 hours a day, 5 days a week, 9 months out of the year for a minimum of 12 years on average. So we cannot reasonably expect those people to change with a plea from us, some commercials, some cartoons. That's just not going to happen. But what we can do is make sure that we don't create anymore, cut off the source, cut off the spigot, cut off those white supremacy madrasas, and then infuse them with true and full history and culture about African Americans, about who created this country, and really who created the world. When we do that, now we're changing the lens in which they filter information. So instead of them having issues in bringing in true history, right, now when that false stuff is sent to them, they have to filter it through the true history lens. So we're flipping the script 180 degrees. It has to happen. So either we do that, or every May and June, depending on what part of the country you're in, you're going to continually graduate a fresh batch of Charlottesville young white supremacists.
A fresh crop of Dylan Roots.
That's right.
Kiki Curry and Jackie Wayne Jones.
A fresh crop of Kyle Rittenhouse.
That's right.
A fresh crop.
They're all young.
Ted, this is what you're pretty much telling us now. We're waiting on them to die. You understand? We're waiting on this new. So I just want people listening to know it won't happen in our lifetime. The work is in our lifetime. The results of our work is not in our lifetime.
That's right. That's right.
That is a very interesting thing to tell somebody, because the nation says, I do this, and then this happens. I do 8 hours, they paid me $100. I do this, you know, it's a very tit-for-tat. What you're trying to get, and the real work is on those different ethnicities to get their voices out, and for what the kind liberal progressive hippie tree hugging white to insist that this kind of mentality is taught in their home, so that way it can trickle to the school. It will not begin in the school. It has never began in the school. In fact, that's where they go to tear apart at what you have been taught at home, really. So we're waiting. No, we're not waiting. We're working now in anti-racist ways to fight back against pretty much a beast of illiteracy. A plague of illiteracy that we won't see the positive results of in our lifetime, but in fact are seeds of sanity that we plant in the present that we hope trickle, manifest, ricochet, blossom in the future for a better society. That's what you're telling. And some of our work is saying our voice, speaking out when we see things, atrocities that are wrong, making sure that our historical narrative gets spoken about, written about in newspapers, put in journalistic form, and most importantly, teaching our own kids about what had happened, right? Or is there other work that you can suggest?
So that is, and waiting is probably the wrong word. You changed it correctly, working towards. What we have to do is we have to be good ancestors. I know we're here now, but what we have to do is plant the seeds of change that when the crops come up, and it might be multiple generations of those crops, because it's going to take a long time for that 80% to die. And keep in mind, even though that 80% eventually is going to die out, that 80% still has influence on 100% of their own. So this is, yes, this is a long-term proposition. But in the meantime, that's just one of the strategies that we have to put in place to ensure that we put a nail in the coffin. But in the meantime, there are other things that can be done, and we talked about some of them on the show. We have to register to vote and vote as a collective block, at least at the same volume as in this 2020 election, coming up to this 2022 and then 2024 election. Otherwise, we see the laws that they're passing in these southern states and some western states, some midwestern states, are going to permanently disenfranchise people and put the insurrectionist party in a position that they could turn this country into an autocracy. So there are multiple moving parts. I'm simply saying the long-term goal is going to get you probably 80% of the way, but it's not going to happen in our lifetime. We have to be like our ancestors who sacrificed and suffered so that the three of us could speak as candidly as we're doing today that they couldn't do back then and could do it in the public sphere. They did that so we could do what we're doing today. They went through it. We have to go through it now for our ancestors to continue the work that was started by those who came long and many generations before us. Our buying power, that's something that has pretty quick response from businesses, right? We see, again, with Major League Baseball. We see what happened with a couple of the airlines, right? Now we need to bring that pressure to bear to businesses that operate out of Texas, and many of them have even funded some of those candidates that are passing these voter suppression rules. We cannot let them get a pass because they did one good thing. We have to keep the pressure up. This is a marathon, and it's a marathon with us who are living so our progeny can benefit from our efforts as good ancestors, as we did from those who came before us who are ancestors today.
That, I mean, it's such a daunting thing to ask someone. But when you realize that someone did that for us, someone laid their very life down, someone picked up their family and moved north, someone was the only, oil man on a rig, or the only, butler in an affluent family. There has always been those among us who understood what had to happen in the future. And that is the beauty. If you want to know where you can find our luster, where you can find what I think is golden about African Americans, is that even though we are currently gripped in the liberation struggle, we're not singularly focused on things like obtaining a gun for right now, my right now safety, or we are here talking about stuff that has to happen in the future, educational changes, shifts in hiring practices. We think long term, and it's a part of our stress pattern. I can't tell you right now, how much of our reality is bogged down in tomorrow, 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 what has to happen for tomorrow. But eventually we will pass down I get to live my life for today, something that I've been thinking about a lot for my son. We talked about this last show, about his ability to be him, like however he wants to be, and the void of this ever-present lifelong mission to make something better for something one other than his actual biological children or family. That collective, while it's beautiful, it is taxing psychologically and physically. And I don't want us to give it up, Mr. Rodney, but I want you to at least admit and come to bear what it means to work now toilously, if you can, for something that you may not see, but that somebody else may eventually be the benefit of, you know?
So there is work to be done, and though it's a daunting task, I was thinking about butt breaking. I thought about Roots and the story of Kunta Kinte after he had run away. And I was thinking about what happened in Wilmington, North Carolina, when people spoke up and how that changed the course of the South and eventually changed the course of this country from what happened in Wilmington, North Carolina. You know, again, before Greenwood, there was Wilmington, North Carolina, and so many others. But the same thing was what caused the destruction of most of them, and that was white men's fear of miscegenation. So when we know these things, you know, not too far from Tulsa, in about 7 years after Tulsa in Texas, white people did the same thing because supposedly a black man had some contact with a white woman. And
it's always
Mr.
a man
Hughes,
and a woman.
Yeah, and of course it was false because Mr. Hughes went to the plantation owner for his $6 that the plantation owner owed him. And the plantation owner had his wife, which was unheard of back then, his white wife, go talk to Mr. Hughes and tell him that the plantation
Rodney, what happened?
Okay, yeah. I was ready to finish that. It's something that
you know.
Hey, we ain't doing consumer cellular like that no more. We're going to be done with that. But that's absolutely true. A lot of insurrections in this country happen from one woman's voice saying, ah, he did it.
Rashi.
And from right there.
It was on the popping.
It
was on the popping.
And
that's why, white woman said that.
That's why. And if y'all want to know kind of undercover why black women kind of go side, get that side eye to black men when they, especially when they have a white woman preference, because we are accustomed to seeing things be destroyed because of just the rumor of that. And so to see people willingly engage, I guess it should be a sign that I think change has certainly come, but it's definitely one of those weird, like, you know, being openly sitting out on a bus stop reading as a black person. You couldn't do that 100 years ago. You know, you can't do that 150 years ago. You couldn't be caught with that. So now it's actually something to see us out reading, having book clubs, in the golf club. It's being in places where other people said we ain't got no business. And that, to me, is one of our new frontiers. People of color, and I hate to use that term, but black people, Chinese, I try to get as many ethnicities as possible. We need to start occupying wherever we need to want to be so that it won't be such a shock when you get five black women trying to play golf at a certain time. It won't be a shock when you see, you know, certain people in the first class of the plane. It won't be a shock to you that makes you have to react when you see us, you know, climbing onto SpaceX. You should not whisper when you see me walk onto the International Space Station. You know, we got to get past our place. And I believe that, you know, yes, addressing history, yes. Yes, telling people about their atrocities in the moment, yes. But the most powerful thing I think we could do is be wherever the fuck we want to be, whenever the hell we want to be there. That's it. That's it. If you want to be at Colonial Williamsburg, then do it. You know, if you want to be at the Watts Towers, do it. If you want to be, you know, whatever it is, truly, try. Because the reason why we're in a hell in a half handbasket is because some black man decided he wanted to be president. And that shocked this whole nation into doing some other weird shit. So if we can get the shock off of these people about us daring or having, like he said, the audacity to do whatever we want to do whenever we want to do it, if we can get them past that, right, the shock and awe of it all, of humans doing whatever they want to do, crafting their own reality and being authors of their own fate, then we can
how
do all
dare
this
you?
Other stuff. I mean, you know, hey, I want to, if I want to be a leader of a black rodeo, let's do it. You know, if I want to lead a gun carrying militia, let's do it. The Huey P. Newton Gun Club is not doing nothing wrong.
Ron is back, Rashi. Ron is good,
I'm not sure where I dropped off at, but mainly I'm just saying we have so much power in many different arenas that we don't realize that we have. The people who know have an obligation to tell the people who don't. It is not up to the people who don't know to do because they don't know what to do. It is up for the people who know to educate and share with the others and help inspire them to move us together collectively. So when I come on this show, I send out, you know, the announcement to local people, because even though this show is based Midwest and East Coast,
that the topics that we're discussing impact black people everywhere. And when I say everywhere, I mean all across this country, but really throughout the world. So now is the time for us to unify. And I send the messages out to the people so that just like Lee, when you came out here and presented to Joe Mann, Black Wall Street Award, to people like Gwen Walker, Brian Harris, and Casey Conda and others, right? The Honorable Judge Harris. That was linking the
hey,
truth. And Lee, what did I say to you years ago when we started this? You started on the East Coast.
I was going to be on the East Coast. You were going to be on the West Coast, and we bring the country together in a minute. That's what you said. You said that to me in 1997. You said that to me in 1997. You said, brother, you go back to the East Coast, I'll be on the West Coast, and we're going to bring this thing together in the middle. But, Rodney, I want to speak to that point because, you know, family and radio, a couple of things that you don't do, right, is when you have a syndicated program, you never say the hour. So if you ever listen to a radio show or a television program and they keep telling you it's 10 minutes past the hour, it's a half an hour past the hour, whatever, that means that they are broadcasting in multiple time zones, and they never want to give away the fact that they are in multiple time zones. And for quite some time, we did that on the show. We never really gave away where we were on the show. Well, we decided to break that barrier, I guess, about a year or so ago. And one of the reasons that, first off, I never put my name on the show. And secondly, we never really broadcast where we were broadcasting from is because the show is, was, and will continue to be intended to not be localized. The thought behind it, the creation of it, was never for it to be around the way thing. It was always thought of, presented to be, and meant to be bigger than just around the way. It was thought of and presented to be something that gives you actionable items that you can use no matter where you are. Now, you may not be in the right time to use that information, but at least you have the information, so when you run up on the right time, you can grab it and do what you need to do. Well, I appreciate you, Rodney, for saying that, you know, the information that we present on the show is not only local, national, international, because it is. The intent is to constantly bring you guests, information, again, that you can use no matter where you live and no matter where you are in life. There's a difference. I intend to bring someone on very soon to talk about autism. Why? I'm finding more and more of our youth are being diagnosed as being on the system, on the spectrum. Why not have that conversation? There are a lot of people going through that. Let's have that conversation. Let's bring folks into our family that will come back time and time again to constantly update us on more and more information. You know, there are times when you all know that if you listen to the show, we go through spouts where we don't have guests, and that's okay. It's not always about having someone else's opinion. Sometimes it's about us actually taking the information that's present before us, that's present before you, chewing it up amongst ourselves so that you all can get it in a manner that you, too, would chew it up with your friends with. That was the basis of the show. When we first launched the show, Rodney was gracious enough to have an independent contractor come in, do a study about the show. And one of the feedbacks from the study was that people felt like they were at home talking to their friends. That is the reason that we do the show the way we do it. It drives us crazy at times. Rashi goes crazy because on Thursday night, Friday morning, she says to me almost every week, are we still talking about the same thing that we talked about on Wednesday? And I'm like, yeah, no. And, you know, most of the time it's yes. A lot of the time, though, is yeah, no. We you know, should change. There was a vote yesterday.
Yeah. I got two interviews.
Right.
I got two interviews that I'm trying to tease out of some people, and they just act like I'm asking for the first virgin birth. I'm like, no, I just want to get your perspective.
Right. But it's not even about that. It's the fact that, you know, the news changes. So the 12-year-old and the 14-year-old Bonnie and Clyde, the two white youth that escaped from a program in which they were supposed to be, but again, they escaped, they broke into a home, they found firearms, and they're shooting at the police, sheriff deputy, down in Florida, right? The young white girl, she gets shot. She's in the hospital. The young white boy, he comes out, hands up, he's taken into custody. We didn't go into that today. We could have went into that today. I just covered it real quick because Tamar Rice didn't have that opportunity. In 3 seconds, he was killed. The young brother was it Chicago or Minnesota about 2 months ago? Similar situation. He comes out, hands up from behind a fence. He's shot immediately. Cops say he has a gun. He had no gun. You know, but these young white folk, firing at police, actually firing at police, one is shot, the other one is taken alive. That's an issue. It's an issue because the weight of the law isn't applied across the board evenly. That's why it's an issue. I'm not pissed because this young white boy didn't get shot. That's not why I'm pissed. I'm pissed because I think that if that young white boy was Ken Anthony would be dead right now. And we'd be planning a funeral for Ken Anthony. And Ben Crump would be on television talking shit about this shouldn't happen.
We'd have the Crump buzzing around. That's right.
Say that again, because
I think people don't hear us when we say that. We don't want more dead white people.
Not at all.
We want less dead other people.
Black other people, right.
Everybody else who's having to suffer from lacking benefit of the doubt to be considered now, whatever status they called each other, because they called each other. They said, let's not kill these little kids.
Right, exactly.
One policeman say to another policeman, hey, y'all, because they was ready.
He looks like my nephew.
Please understand,
like
they was ready
nephew.
To shoot both them
like
kids, them cops was.
Mm-hmm.
Someone from above said, hey, man, maybe, yeah, please don't kill that baby. You know, come on, man, let's not kill the babies, not right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And somebody was able to find the strength with that. Okay, let's just find whoever's voice that is, tape it, and every time we get
a situation
like this, play that motherfucker right there and see if we can get some universal. Man.
See if we can get everybody back home at the end of the day. But that's not the case. So, you know, that's my issue. But again, to go back from where I started, the point has always been to not be pigeonholed to a certain region, a certain city, or whatever. One of the reasons I don't do a lot of news about Baltimore is because this show is not about Baltimore. It's not about that. We are a information providing service. That's why we're here. And if it's happening to you in Des Moines, if it's happening to you in Opa-locka, if it's happening to you in Lubbock, if it's happening to you in Rome, that's in New York, we're going to talk about it. You know, we're going to reach out to people on the ground. We're going to try to bring them in and bring their perspective to you, so let you know what's going on, no matter where it is, no matter who it is. Now, I have on purpose shied away from a lot of the celebrity stuff, more so than not. And I've done that because I don't like to feel that people people are getting gassed up from what we do, if that makes any sense. You know what I'm saying? I'm not here for that. So there's a couple people that I asked to be on the Father's Day show, and I won't call them out. Hopefully, they'll return my invite. I've talked to them individually and told them well before now that I want them to be on the Father's Day show. God willing, the creek don't rise. One, if not both of them, will come on. We'll have a great conversation. You'll never know, and we'll keep it moving. If not, I'm not going to call them out. It's not worth it to me. But they are in the public light. I reached out to them, not because they were in the public light, but because I really think that their stories are worth telling, be it they were in the public light and not. And I thought they were both, and I still believe they're cool. They're pretty grounded, stable, good dudes. And I wanted them to have their say outside of the rah-rah and the ya-ya of the lights, camera, and action. You know, because, again, people are still people, no matter what you believe of their status, public status. Again, I believe both of these cats are some really good dudes. So if it shakes out the way they're both on, that's awesome. If not, that's okay. You know, life happens. But I'm not chasing after folks like that. No, we're not doing that. We're not doing that. You know, I talked about skills coming on next week. That's major for me, because I'm letting people out of my Rolodex that I don't do stuff like that. You know, I know people, and I'm not just going to put you on blast because I know you. I'm not just running to the well because I know you. You know what I'm saying? Our relationship is our relationship, and everybody don't need to know about that. You know, if you do, then you do. But if you don't, you don't. And that's cool. You know, but that's neither here nor there. You know, again,
one
we appreciate
people,
you.
I would like to try to get on is our National Black United Front chapter leader. He's extremely busy. She's extremely busy, but, you know, doing things like creating Juneteenth events and providing publishing venues for black authors and things like that, monetary system for black businesses. So I'm going to try my best to do that. But in the meantime, for those who are interested in getting information, I would like for us to look at collectively Carol Anderson's new book called The Second. And it has a lot to do with this right to bear arms and where that idea came from and what it really means to own a weapon and why we feel like it's a part of the American right system and not necessarily even a privilege but a right. And so The Second is the name of her book, and I found it to be extremely informative. There is an interview for it if you wanted to look at it, where she details a lot of historical findings and insurrections that made the powers that be in this country feel like they need to have arms in order to keep this place America, what they thought it was going to be, the America they thought it was going to be. So if you want to come to terms with what's happening, maybe with mass shootings and all that, we can start delving into some of the foundations using books like The Second from Carol Anderson. And that was pretty much what I wanted to end my part on, just seeing if I could get anyone to go and look at some of that information and see what they thought about that idea.
Ronnie, you have any closing thoughts?
Learn your power, and when you discover your power, exercise your power. For those local to Las Vegas, please go to the Samuel L. Smith Education Foundation Facebook page or go to my page, Rodney Smith, to look for some upcoming events with Juneteenth, because remember, Juneteenth wasn't getting this much airtime either, and it just so happens to correspond with the anniversary, the 100th of Tulsa. So Juneteenth should be a national holiday. It's a holiday here in Vegas now. So please support those events.
That's what's up. Look, family, we appreciate you for listening live. We appreciate you for listening later. Until next week, as we say, week in and week out, we love you in advance. Nothing you can do about it.